He went into the Philippines. He wanted to know all of the healing modalities. He went into the Philippines to see the Filipino healers. He went into on a drug assignment into Central America. He wanted to know, but he wanted to know about the medicines. He knew that the medicines was in the plants. And he met the shamans and the medicine man, he said. And he said he worked with him for a while, and he said the skull was given to him. He came back to Houston. He started a healing foundation, and that's where he placed the skull in his altar, and they used it as their healing and their spiritual tool. And they used to chant and talk Tibetan to it, claim they communicated with it. And I didn't know anything about energy or how high the energy was coming off of this crystal skull. And they would tap that energy and focus it into the meridian and acupuncture points of their patient's body to assist in the healing. So I knew they revered it, but I didn't know anything about it. I'd go home, and my husband said, well, what did the monks do today? And I said, well, the crazy monks talk to a rock. You know, the crazy monks talk to a rock. But, you know.
Your husband doesn't sound like he was a believer.
Well,
at that point.
I was just there, and I watched him. He extended our daughter's life. I was there. I watched him do the healing work. It wasn't that I wasn't a believer. I just didn't understand. You know, and oftentimes people are afraid of things that they don't understand. So I didn't understand what they were doing. I just knew they were talking to the rock, and they was healing people, and they were doing their work. And, of course, we had other lamas there, and one lama was straight out of Tibet, and I didn't know he was a high lama. He was called Choji Lama. And his name was known all over Tibet like the Dalai Lama. And he was found by a man named Dundal Sorong. And Sorong came from high nobility of Tibet. He worked as a high official in the house of the Dalai Lama for 27 years. In fact, Dundal Sorong's father was the commander general of Tibet.
All right.
So he came from a high political family. And he walked in this little backstreet restaurant, and he saw this high lama back there cooking and washing dishes. And he didn't, you know, he escaped in 59. He didn't know the language.
Mm-hmm.
He took what he could to make a living. And he recognized us being a high lama. So we went over there and he started talking Tibetan to him. And he threw his arms around each other and he brought him to the foundation where we were. And he escaped with ancient Tibetan books. And so they were always practicing. He always took a liking to me, and I couldn't understand why. I'd go in there, and I would think, you know, that's his name. So I'd just wave at him and say, hey, Choji. Hey, Choji. Well, that wasn't his name. That was his title. But he would grin and bow, and he would always come to the healing the office. He'd come to bring me to the healing room, and I couldn't understand why.
Sounds like Yoda almost.
I don't understand it. I didn't understand it at all. But I go down there, and after, you know, I didn't understand what an honor and a privilege this was to wait after all of these people die. And really, when you start listening to this and you see all the synchronicities that came together like a book or a pattern or something, it just blows my mind. So I go down in the healing room, and I'm grinning, and he's grinning, and I thought, well, you know, I don't have anything to fear this guy. He, you know, he grins and bows and backs away. So I looked to see what he was doing, and he had different plants and stuff in there, and I didn't know that's how they made their medicines. And I'd come home, and my husband said, well, what went on today? I said, well, the monks showed me a bunch of weeds in a cup, a bunch of grass and stuff. So he says, what do you mean they're showing you a bunch of grass? I said, well, it looks like a bunch of grass to me, but it was their plants. They were making their medicines and their ointments. And he would come and get me. I mean, this is all. I had a 20-year-long adventure, but this is my learning experience. And these are the things that I thought about and went through.
Did you learn by osmosis, Joanne, because you were there, or were you studying?
I didn't study at all, no. Through my psychic, I looked at it and I watched it, and I guess I was just taking this all in and not knowing what I was even looking at, but it was going into my subconscious and unconscious mind. But I watched him do this. He would come get me and take me to the kitchen, and he was making me these little Tibetan hamburgers. Oh, this was all.
What's a Tibetan hamburger?
I didn't know either, and I didn't know that Tibetans didn't eat meat, so I don't know what I ate today. But I tell you one thing. They were some spicy meatballs. So this kitchen was in a square.
Were they made out of plants?
I don't know. I thought they were meat or something, and he would come get them. They were hot.
I'm not sure I want to know what they were.
Well, they didn't. They were hot. I'd put them in my purse, see, and I'd come home and try to give them the dog. No, the dog didn't want them, but he would do this all the time.
Dog wouldn't want them.
Yeah, he'd come in here and he'd hand me these little plates of hamburgers, and he would wait till I eat one. When he'd go, I'd put them in the purse.
What did it do for you after you ate the thing?
Well, nothing. They were just really hot and spicy.
I mean, it didn't give you any special
powers or anything? No, they were just some of their food that they ate, like rice and stuff would go with it.
Okay.
So I'd go in there, and the kitchen was in a square, and he was flipping these little hamburgers, and they had a cat and didn't sweep the floor, so he and I and the cat was watching these little hamburgers flip. And one day, one flipped in the floor. So he just picked it up and put it back in the pan, and neither he nor the cat or I missed a beat. We just kept watching the hamburger slip up and down, and he handed them to me. And all I could think, oh, my gosh, which one just went into all the cat hair? So, you know, this is all of this was my training, yes, my learning. I didn't even know what was going on, and I walked out, and listen, I never heard of acupuncture needles. Didn't know what they were.
Okay, so let's, through, while all this is going on then, explain again how the crystal skull came to be with him.
They came to be with Norbu?
Yeah.
Well, again, he went down there on a drug assignment. And he went in there because he wanted to know the medicines. He wanted to know the ointments. He wanted to know what the shaman
And they was doing. Gave this to him.
They gave this to him. He said after, I don't know if he worked on them, if he helped them, or what they did.
It was a gift.
It was a gift.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's now Max is what, 16 pounds?
He works 18 pounds and 2 ounces.
All right. How big is he, I guess?
He's just a little larger than a human head size.
Okay.
And the pictures do not do him justice, and we'll talk about the science of him.
Okay.
But anyway, the llama would do acupuncture on me. I didn't know what they were doing, and I found out that this was a high llama.
Was the skull always near anything he did in terms of practice?
The skull was in the healing room. The skull was not, when people came in to go through their healing, they would not touch the skull because Norbu did not want to take away from what he was doing.
How important was the skull to what he was doing?
I think it was very important because they would chant to it and talk to it, and they would talk to it in the mornings and the evenings. And when each person came in there, they would touch that energy. They would touch that skull, and that's when they would touch the patient starting at the top of the head.
So my impression then is the skull somehow gave the llama the power, the energy to do whatever he did.
Well, I think his healing modalities was already there, and I think that he had the ability with or without the skull, but I believe the skull, because of the energy, expanded on what he did.
Okay.
Enhanced it.
Okay, and in your best history now, you've been with the skull for years.
Yes.
Is it something of, I guess, if one would say it's heavenly, is that what it is? I mean, does it give off?
Well, Max is mystical and magical, and you know he's got magnetism. It has an energy field that I didn't know anything about.
It's not negative by any means, is it?
Well, I don't know anyone he's killed yet.
No, not
negative. Everyone gets a good feeling off of Max, and of course it does depend on a person's levels of growth and understanding.
How'd we get the name Max?
He gave himself his name. I brought him home before the llama died. He gave it to us, and his parting words were, he could have just given it to the other monks, but I'll tell you, I think I know why. But his parting words were, he said, take care of this, and one of these days you'll know what it's for and what it's about. Well, we really didn't. We knew it was their heating tool, so we brought it home and we put it in a box in a closet for almost 10 years. I thought it was laying around there minding its own business, but it wasn't. It was minding mine because it would come to me in dreams. I would dream this would come to me in dreams, and it was always telling me that I needed to find this particular person, this particular man. And, I mean, can you imagine going to your closet and hearing this in your head?
In your head.
That you haven't found this particular man and that he was important to mankind?